So, good evening, everybody. It's good to see you all out here for week number two. Clearly, week one scared off a lot of people. Now, unlike last week's prayer, which we examined, Unasana Tokef, which is really looked upon as an only Yamim Noraim prayer, this week we selected Aleinu Lishabeach, which is, of course, a tefillah that we say on a daily basis, at the very least three times a day, usually not more, but... Nevertheless, it is also considered like one of the highest points of the Rosh Hashanah and eventually Yom Kippur davening as well. And I figured we'd look at a little bit of the background as to who composed Aleinu, when, how, and how it actually made its way into our prayers over time. And that's really going to be the focus of tonight's shiur. So we'll begin with a source that we often put in there just because it's a good repository of information from 100 years ago. And that is the same source we used last week, the 1906 Jewish Encyclopedia article on Aleinu, who gives two suggestions that we're really not going to look further into, just a little bit of important background. Menashe ben Israel in his, I don't even want to read that, number two, ascribes the Aleinu to the man of the great synagogue. That means the Anshe Knesset HaGedola, for those of us who speak English. I mean, Moses Mendelssohn, also in his memorandum, declares the Aleinu to be one of the oldest prayers of the nation, inducing as proof of its ancient and pre-Christian character the fact that no mention is made in it of the restoration of the Jewish temple and state, which would scarcely have been omitted had it been composed after their destruction. It was obviously written, he says, at the time when the Jews still lived in their own land. People actually disagreed with him and said that there were hints within the Aleinu text to the fact that it was actually written at a time and praying for the restoration of the Beit HaMikdash. Nevertheless, a simple reading of it says that it's fine with the sign-in sheets. I think we're good because we've got everybody here. Nevertheless, you know, some people do again argue with him, but Aleinu is also very interesting in that it's been sort of a source of discussion, debate, and a big, big issue with other nations when they have been in control of Jewish places. Obviously, some of the themes of Aleinu, if we think of the words a little bit, the way it may refer to other gods and other nations, may not be something that people always appreciated. Specifically, Christians were highly offended. There is a whole history here that could be given on the Christian-Jewish interactions around Aleinu, and you know, varik, the word varik, at some point was popularized that the word vav, resh, yud, kuf is actually the same gematria as Yeshu. And so that was, shehem yishtachrim lehev varik became a big deal. And there's a lot, you know, again, a lot more where that came from, but that's not tonight's topic. However, the fact that this is clearly a very, 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 very old prayer is something that's relevant in those discussions to say, well, was this really written, you know, with other nations in mind, or does this predate these other religions even existing? So that's something which also comes up, but nevertheless, we know it's a really, really old tefillah, whether you're going to say it's Anshe Knesset HaGedola some other time, it's very, very early, that is 100% clear. Now, one of the earliest versions we have of Aleinu Lishabeach is in source number two here. It's actually slightly different. It's found in a sefer called Maaseh Merkava, which is called part of the versions of Heichalot. Okay, I left only the Hebrew, just so you can look at it if you want. It's there. There are some slight changes. Instead of Aleinu in the plural, it's Alei Lishabeach. And there are, again, slight changes in it. And those were as part of the books of the Merkava. It's a type of early Kabbalistic Midrash. You look in source number three. Source number three actually dates it for you. Safrut ha'echalot v'amerkava hushem kolel ke-25 25 chiburim mystic works shechubru kanireh bein ha-me'ah ha-shnia le-me'ah ha-chamishit l'sfira v'eretz Yisrael. So somewhere between the 2nd and 5th century is how some people date them. Zeu ha-taharuch ha-mikubal. That's the accepted dating. Ach yesh ha-sovrim ki al pishem ha-masoret b'nosei achen k'duma ha-chiburim b'chtav nerchu rak b'me'ah shvi'it ha-shmini. Some people say it was actually only formally written, even though it has an earlier tradition, but it was only formally written down in the 7th or 8th centuries. Nevertheless, we're talking about something that this is one version of Aleinu that we have that is mentioned, is going back very, very early, just in this version alone, never mind the version that we have in our Sidurim, or really in our Machzorim. This is one particular version of it, and this is, again, the very, even though we don't know exactly when it crept in to the Rosh Hashanah davening, meaning the Gemara makes no mention of Aleinu L'Shabach, not anywhere. So we don't have in any of the Sifrei Chazal a reference to it. On the other hand, it's very likely that if it wasn't around then, it was around right after, then it could be it was even around earlier and just didn't make it in to be mentioned in any of the places where we might have expected it. In general, I mean, you know, you're talking about how many tefillos are mentioned, you know, by Chazal? Tefillos that are, you know, created later that are not based on, you know, Tanakh, let's say Tehillim or something like that, and are not really what the Anshei Knesset Gedolah set up for Shmona Esrei. I mean, you're dealing with very, very little. So it definitely is a very, very ancient prayer. Again, probably predates, even according to secular scholars, or Moses Mendelssohn, whatever you want to consider him. You know, we're dealing with something that's probably at the turn of the century, if not earlier. So this is clearly a very, very old prayer, but the version of it that we have from these Heichalot does come from somewhere around that time. The question arises, first of all, is that the earliest version that we have? And did the Heichalot literature get it from a prayer that was already being said in the synagogue? Or was it composed then and spread into, you know, the liturgy of the High Holidays? That's the first question that we're going to examine. One other general source on this, by the way, is an article by Benny Gesundheit. Bless you. In Haaretz, he actually talked a little bit more about Rik, right? Shemishtachim Lehevel Varik, and as we mentioned earlier, the connotation of the word Varik, and what that might mean. And he comments in general, in regards to the time of the composition of the prayer of Aleinu, there have been many suggestions, specifically on the heels of polemics with the Christians. According to some of the researchers, the prayer was already composed at the time of the Beit HaMikdash, since it does not contain a request for building the Beit HaMikdash, rather of uprooting idolatry from the land of Israel, based on Brachot 57b. According to many Rishonim, and here we hear, Yehoshua, the son of Nun, composed this prayer when he entered the land of Israel, and Rabbi Yaakov, the son of Asher, the author of the Tur, attributes the text of the prayer to the writings of Heichalot and Merkava of the Kabbalists. So we have our first statement on this front, which is, namely, first of all, he gave you, again, a little bit of background. We know that it's very early. Some people say Yehoshua ben Nun wrote it, and he seems to be saying that the Tur, who is a tremendous halachic source, tells us that the text of the prayer should be attributed to the Heichalot and Merkava of the Kabbalists. If you actually look in the Tur, by the way, he simply says you should correct the text that we have based on the text of the Heichalot. Now, does that mean that he says that's the first time that it happens? Does it mean that it wasn't in our Machzorim beforehand? No, it doesn't mean that at all. It's simply that he's saying that's a good text to reference from. And he brings a proof from the Heichalot text to say that's how you should read Aleinu. Again, whether you say Kisei Kvodo Bashamayim Imal or Umoshav Yekaro, which we say, and he says since in Heichalot it says Umoshav Yekaro Bashamayim Imal, that is the correct reading. Now, back to our question of which one came first, the one in our Machzorim or the one in the Heichalot, a very, very well-known academic, Israel Tashma, cited in an interesting long article on this by someone by the name of Meir Bar-Ilan, who I believe is a relative of Rav Meir Bar-Ilan, but don't get them confused, they are not the same person. Nevertheless, he has their, you know, we'll read the English in source number 6. Recently, Meir Bar-Ilan suggested that the source of this prayer is in the writings of the Merkava, and from there it was taken to the Rosh Hashanah prayers, and I cannot agree with this view. The opposite is true, as is accepted, and as M.D. Schwartz showed correctly in his paper on the subject, and he says, you know, many of the elements of this prayer don't seem to be of the classic Kabbalistic type that you would expect to appear for the first time in the Merkava, but many other proofs as well that are documented in that paper and others to say that, listen, it's very unlikely that the text was composed for the first time in Kabbalistic circles in this Merkava, as well as other details about it that we assume that it was actually written earlier and not during that Merkava period, or the Heichalot period, which we mentioned earlier. It seems that it's very much accepted, even again, in the secular academic world, that this is something that's really, really early. We're not talking about like 5th or 6th century. That's simply unrealistic. You know, even amongst the academics, if you're looking at 2nd century, that's like practically, you know, and it's certainly an appropriate time, maybe even late. For some, you know, you see 1st, 2nd, 3rd century, and maybe even earlier, as we mentioned, there was an opinion that he cited, that Benny Gesundheit cited, saying that Aleinu L'Shabeach was written by Yehoshua bin Nun. And for that, when we turn the page to source number 7, we get the text of a letter, and again, I only reproduced it in Hebrew because we're not going to go through the text of this letter. We're just simply going to highlight some points in it. It's a letter about Aleinu L'Shabeach that was attributed to Rav Haigon, who lived about the 11th century, okay, really around 1000. And they copied out this letter, was published in one of the publications, sort of these regular yearly, bi-yearly, whatever it is, publications, where someone went and found the manuscript of this letter and copied it out. Other people have copied out different versions. There are a few manuscripts of this letter that remain, and apparently this letter is the letter of Rav Haigaon about Aleinu L'Shabeach. And he talks about how he's, it begins by saying this is the letter of Rav Haigaon to these people who lived in Arnalik, or Andalik in different versions of the letter. And they lived in Eretz Hodu, and he says, how are you? This is great. And they basically ask him a question. These three rabbis, Rav Nasan, Rav Shealtiel, and Rav Klonimus, and the other great rabbis, they ask him a question. They say they have a machlokes between two of the greatest rabbis who are living at that time. On the one hand, they have a letter from Rabbeinu Gershom Maor Hagola, okay? And they have a letter from the Rif. Okay, Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi. These, again, are two... So this is right around 1,000. Okay? And again, that's when all of those people lived. These were all living in late 900s, early 1,000s. We'll talk a little bit more, but that's right exactly around 1,000. Anyways, maybe a few years after that, 20 years, 30 years, but right around that time period. And these people have sent to Rav Haigaon these letters, or at least the contents of the letters that they've received from Rabbeinu Gershom, from the Rif, and there's an argument between them. Okay, the Rif wrote that the idea of saying Aleinu L'Shabeach every single day is a takana of the Gaonim, of which Rav Haigaon is really one of the last in line of the Gaonim, of the Gaonic period, which means something that happened recently, even though, again, it was established by Yehoshua bin Nun. However, the Rif says that no, it was actually Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai who established that it should be said on a daily basis. And they ask him, to please decide between them. Following this, he actually says, yes, it should follow Rabbeinu Gershom, you should follow Rabbeinu Gershom over the Rif, and Yehoshua bin Nun did indeed establish this, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said that every single day a person must say Aleinu L'Shabeach. This is something that's written again by Rav Haigaon around the year 1000, saying that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai has established that on a daily basis you've got to be saying Aleinu L'Shabeach. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai obviously living almost 1,000 years before that, right? So, following this, and as an addendum to this letter, there is actually an entire commentary in a very Kabbalistic style, and it's signed at the end by Rav Haigaon. So Rav Haigaon apparently was the one who wrote not only this letter, but the commentary. However, Rav Haigaon was not known as let's call him the greatest Kabbalist. He wasn't so into that stuff, and the style seems to be a little bit off. If you look in the Iyun Tefillah commentary to the Siddur Otzer HaTzfilah, which is a very well-known Siddur. This is written by, again, I think it was in the 1800s. I forgot his name. I was going to put it on, and then it slipped my mind. But nevertheless, it's considered a very reputable source. He says, Kol ha-me'ayin v'chol ha-tshuva ha-hu, that should say kol, not bal. Anybody who examines that entire tshuva will see, based on its style, that it was not composed by Rav Haigaon. Rather, he says the first part, the letter was written by one of the great rabbis in the generation of Rashi. And the commentary, right, so we're dealing with about 1,100 rather than 1,000. And the commentary of Aleinu L'Shabeach was written by one of the Mekubalim. He doesn't give you a date for that. It could be 100 or 200 years after that even. And accidentally, he says, the name of Rav Haigaon was signed. But there's no way, he says, you're reading this. If you know anything about Rav Haigaon, there's no way Rav Haigaon wrote this. Part of the details, by the way, is if you look in the letter that's supposedly written, it refers to the Rif Zal, which means he had already passed away. If he's already passed away, he actually passed away after Rav Haigaon. So it's already something suspicious. So he says it was probably written 100 or 200 years later. He doesn't know this for a fact. He's saying most likely this is who wrote it, but it certainly wasn't Rav Haigaon. He says the Rav Haigaon getting added on was a real mistake. How did it happen? Who knows? However, There is significant evidence that I cannot bring myself to dispute or disagree with in any way, that this is actually 100% a forgery. This entire letter, which is, again, attributed to Rav Haigon, is not simply that it was written by someone else and it was a mistake. It was actually a meaningful forgery by someone who was trying to do something with it. Now, what they're trying to do with it, who knows? I mean, that doesn't really... We'll discuss that in a moment, but really, honestly, it doesn't really matter. Anyways, but here are some of the points of evidence that are expressed in one particular article, as well as some other things that I talked about, and we'll discuss some of the other points as well. So number one, I looked on Otzar HaChachma. Otzar HaChachma has tens of thousands of Sfarim from all sorts of walks of life, from all sorts of research. Researchers have looked into this as well. We never find any community by this name that's writing to anybody. Presumably, if they're writing one thing, and that's the only thing we know of them, that's a little bit suspicious. Number two, Rav Haigon's name was actually signed wrongly at the end of the tshuva. His grandfather's name was wrong. It was a different name than we actually know his grandfather's name was. Again, highly suspicious. In some of the manuscripts, it is corrected, but based on scholarly research, there are later manuscripts where someone's saying, obviously, Rav Haigon's name is not Ben such and such. It's Ben such and such, and they actually corrected it. His grandfather's name was Hananya, I think it was. I mean, that was corrected, but that was not what it said in the original tshuva. Now, in addition to this, the idea that Rav Haigon is responding not only to Rabbeinu Gershom, but to the Rif, based on the timeline there, Rav Haigon died when the Rif turned 25 years old. Now, I don't know exactly when everything of the Rif was written, but the Rif, by the time he was 25, was probably not such a gadol hador that he was sending letters to this isolated place that no one has ever heard of, with content that no one has ever heard in the name of the Rif in any other place. And that got sent to Rav Haigon to determine who should win this argument between him and Rabbeinu Gershom. And in fact, we don't even have evidence of Rav Haigon dealing with these names in other places. It's not like this was something that commonly happened, like, oh, Rav Haigon was always arbitrating between Rabbeinu Gershom and the Rif. It doesn't happen in Gaonic literature. We don't see that. So that is very suspect. The language and style, as we mentioned, does not at all match Rav Haigon, which was even picked up in the previous point, right? This is someone who's 100% shalem, and he says, like, there's just no way that this is him. There are various inconsistencies, again, in the letter, and we know that similar forgeries were produced in the late 12th century with certain similar writings. Also, there's an entire section of literature discussed in some of the history books called Pseudo-Haigon, where there's a few things that have been attributed to him that are actually not his own. Now, okay, so the truth is, let's look at what we have in this letter. In this letter, we have the first ever occurrence of Yehoshua ben Nun being the author of Aleinu L'Shabeach. We have no sources before that ever suggest that in terms of time. We also have, again, these ideas that it should be said on a daily basis. If you look in source number 10, this is super academic here, so, you know, we're not quite where I'm so comfortable. But nevertheless, what do academics say? Why would someone make a forgery like this? What would be the purpose of it? Like, it's very nice to make forgeries, I guess, if you want to make forgeries for a living, I don't know. But why bother with this? Like, what are you trying to accomplish? So the attribution of Aleinu to Joshua in source number 10, Kenneth E. Berger, may reflect a desire to avoid or negate charges that the reference to those who bow down to vanity and emptiness and pray to a God who does not save is directed towards Christians and Christianity. So, imagine you're living somewhere with a Christian population and now there are all sorts of problems because they're accusing the Jews of showing this sentence as some sort of anti-Christian polemic, that they bow down to worthlessness and emptiness and stupidity, right? Now imagine there's this tradition that it was written by Joshua. Is Joshua responding to Christians? Of course not. So there may have been, he says, that motivation to, you know, bring out such ideas. To say that, listen, Christians, you're telling us, look, we have things from 100, 200, 300 years ago that show explicitly that it was written by Joshua. That's what we Jews say. You can think whatever you want. So that would actually be quite a good defense and one reason to talk about it. Another, on the other hand, he says it may reflect the tendency seen already in rabbinic literature to ascribe greater authority to Jewish practices by claiming that they were instituted by an important not necessarily biblical. He says biblical figure. There are certain times, and it's beyond the scope of this year to discuss them, where people would try to say, someone greater than me said this in an effort to advance what they're doing. Usually it's done in a shtickle malicious way. Not always, though. And that's the way this works. Now, what also we still have to figure out, that's in terms of the Yehoshua ben Nun element, the academic part. We're going to talk more about the Yehoshua ben Nun. Don't think that this means that that's wrong. Absolutely not the case. We're going to talk more about other sources that attributed to Yehoshua ben Nun, and we're going to see if they all came from this forgery or not. Meaning, if this forgery had already spread before anybody else mentions the idea of Yehoshua ben Nun composing Aleinu, then we can say that it's actually completely false and that everybody fell for this forgery. If, however, we see evidence that this Yehoshua ben Nun idea, or Mesorah tradition, was around before this is supposedly forged, then we can say that it's a legitimate tradition, right? And we can say that that's still something that we can subscribe to and try to discuss. Now, here's something very interesting, which is, namely, don't read the next source. It's a very, very well-known story. And this really has a lot to do with the idea of Aleinu being said on a daily basis. And it's told... The story is told as follows. There was a rabbi, some versions have, in Chicago, who was recently told that he was going to be fired from his shul. Anyways, either at the pulpit that Shabbos or at the big shul dinner that was happening the following week, the rabbi gets up there to speak. And he says, I'd like to tell you a story of three unfortunate beings, two blessings, and a segment of the population. And he says, Aleinu, Asher Yatzar, and a mamzer all come to Hashem. And they say, we're really looked down upon, we're really beaten up. We would like to voice our grievances before you. So first, Asher Yatzar opens and says, God, you place me, I'm coming out of the bathroom here. You know, people are running out of the bathroom, washing their hands, quickly murdering Asher Yatzar. I really got the short end of the stick here. I mean, it's so inappropriate what people are doing and just... No one pays me any attention. It's really not fair. God, how could you have done this to me? Right? And again, this is being told by the rabbi who's just been fired by the board of his shul. Okay? Second, Aleinu comes before God and says, God, what have you done? You put me at the end of davening. Everybody's running out of the room. That's even if they're still there. No one says me with kavana. How could you have done this to me? I feel really, really bad. And finally, the mamzer comes before God and says, Hashem, everybody looks down on me. They curse. They curse, you know, other people with my name. I'm not allowed to marry people. How could you have done this to me? This is terrible. So Hashem says, you know what? I hear, you know, what you're saying. He turns to Asher Yatzar and says, Asher Yatzar, I'll tell you what we'll do. I do feel bad. It's right when people are coming out of the bathroom. So what we're going to do from now on is I'm going to put you in the middle of the greatest ceremony of the Jewish life cycle. Perhaps, not necessarily the greatest ceremony, one of the greatest ceremonies of the Jewish life cycle, the wedding. One of the Sheva Brachot is Asher Yatzar Etz Adam Betzalmo. So says God, don't worry, Asher Yatzar, you're going to be taken care of. You're going to shine in the spotlight. And that way we'll make up for this fact that, again, you don't get the respect you deserve. And Aleinu, says God, we got this one. I feel bad. It's at the end of davening. Terrible. So you know what we'll do? We will put you in the middle of the holiest moments of the year, in the middle of Rosh Hashanah davening, in Malchios, in the middle of Yom Kippur davening. We got this, we're taken care of. And he turns to the mamzer and says, but you, what are you complaining about? I already made you president of the shul. So that's the joke, how it goes, again, with the disgruntled rabbi. But it brings up a very important question about Aleinu, which is, did Aleinu really develop like that? Was Aleinu first something that was being said on a daily basis, which then moved over to the high holidays? Or was it in fact the reverse? And the answer very, very, very clearly, we can look in the next source, is it was the reverse. We have numerous people and early Sidurim that place it in the high holiday davening, but if you look in response to Hevel Nachalato 15.5, which is in source number 12, he gives you a laundry list. In the Gaonim, Rif, and Rambam, there is no mention of Aleinu at the end of prayers, and so too in the Avud Raham. So we're already moving into the way the scholars look at it, there is no mention really before about 1100 of anybody saying Aleinu after davening. Never mind in certain communities. Certain communities this happened even later. But before that point, we've got nothing. The earliest source that I found which places Aleinu Shabbat at the end of the weekday prayers is Siddur Rashi, which is a source that apparently recorded what Rashi had in his Siddur. There is some discussion as to whether or not this was a later addition into the Siddur Rashi, but it seems it's fair to take this at face value and say somewhere around 1100, certain communities started saying this. Okay? It may have been 1100, it may have been 1200, it may have been 1300. Scholars are sort of split, but it's somewhere in that area that it was actually started being said on a daily basis, somewhere around that time. On the other hand, for as far as anyone can remember, it's been part of the Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, davening. So are we all clear on that? Nevertheless, that doesn't stop people, like the Daf al Hadaf, which is a compilation of different sources, from actually basically talking about how he says the fact that Aleinu, in fact, is something that people are running out of the room, they're quickly saying it, no one's paying attention. He says we actually have the ability to be mitaking that, to fix that up, by when we have Aleinu come up on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, having the proper kavanas, he says, as many of the Sfarim HaKadoshim say, just fixing it by saying it one time properly with kavana can repair all those times during the year that you've said it with the wrong kavana. So there still is that relationship, the special fixing relationship, where God says to Aleinu L'Shaveach, you know, I'll put you in the heart of the High Holidays prayer. That's also still something you can do to repair your tefillos for the rest of the year. All of your bad Aleinus can be repaired with your one or two or three good Aleinus on the High Holidays. So there is that relationship, but nevertheless, it's clear that it only started coming into the actual daily davening at a later point in time. Now, at this point, we get to look at some other interesting sources. Why and when might it have started coming into the prayers? And for that, you can go back to the Jewish Encyclopedia article, but this is stated pretty much everywhere. We know, and I'll read you this source, and then we'll get on to developing it. But the following is related by Joseph Akon and his Emek HaBacha. Based upon contemporary records, during the persecution of the Jews of Blua, however you want to pronounce that, I don't actually know how to pronounce it. A bunch of people have told me different ways. In 1171, when many masters of the law died as martyrs at the stake, an eyewitness wrote to the Rimi Orleans that the death of the saints was accompanied by a weird song resounding through the stillness of the night, causing the Christians who heard it from afar to wonder at the melodious strains, the like of which they had never heard before. It was ascertained afterwards that the martyred saints had made use of the Aleinu as their dying song. It is quite probable, then, that it became the custom in those tragic days for the martyrs to chant the Aleinu song in order to moderate the agonies of their death. Obviously, this was a nice way to sort of pass away Al Kiddush Hashem. I mean, what more of a statement towards God could you say than Aleinu L'Shabeach? And it's been suggested that at this time it actually started gaining popularity for that reason, and people started to say, I mean, these people are saying it while they're dying, we've got to institute it in our prayers on a more regular basis. That may have been something that contributed to it. That's not to say there weren't, you know, other factors that may have contributed, but nevertheless, this certainly was something. We see there was a rise in the popularity around that point in time, especially due to the fact that martyrs were singing it, and really this was their battle cry to Hashem. We have to praise Hashem. Again, what could be more meaningful than that? Now, we do have a bit of a problem. A problem in what I've presented to you so far. I told you that we had this letter from Rav Haigon, which is the earliest source, and it's around 1000, and it's the first time that mentions that Yehoshua actually was mitaken it, and it mentions that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said it needs to be said every day. So we've pretty conclusively debunked the Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai saying it every day, because there is zero record or mention of it any time before, again, about 1,000 years after Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai dies. So to say that it's been something that's been around is just, you know, it's really hidden from us. They did a really good job of hiding it if it was indeed the case. Or, again, if we're viewing this original letter that we saw as a forgery, then we can say it's perfect. The author, for some reason, has some agenda of spreading this minhag, and that may be for a very good reason. This author may have thought it's a great idea that we're saying Aleinu every day. What better way to spread it than to say Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai set it up? And what's the other opinion? That it's a Takanat Gaonim also earlier than we have. So that may very well have been part of it, again, from sort of an academic perspective, as to what may have been gained by sending out a letter like this, a very good cause, really. I mean, we think that saying Aleinu every day is a good idea. We say it every day. Right, we say it at Shachar, we say it at Mincha, we say it at Maariv. So that may have been something that played along. However, the other element of it has really been left undiscussed until now. The Yehoshua bin Nun element. And here's the thing. In a real legitimate Teshuvot HaGeonim, which is another compendium of Teshuvot, which has parallels in other sources in the Geonim, we actually see a very interesting tshuva, and it's also attributed to Rav Haigon, and it also tells us that Yehoshua wrote Aleinu. And if that's the case, maybe that was the original reason for attributing this tshuva to Rav Haigon, because we see this same idea coming up with the same author. Look, Rav Haigon in another tshuva also mentions this. And here we go. Says the Tshuvot HaGeonim, Sharei Tshuva 43. There's again a bunch of different collections of the Tshuvot HaGeonim. This is in the Tshuvot HaGeonim called Sharei Teshuva from Rav Haigon. And we'll read the English. It's a little bit garbled. I think the version that I had was more garbled than the other versions. I've seen it cited elsewhere and it's less garbled. But anyways, and that which you asked about Eruvin and Yadayim, which the Gemara says that Shlomo Melech established, it makes sense that Shlomo, King Shlomo, established Eruvin and Yadayim, and Yehoshua established Alinu L'Shabeach, and it was not established by the rabbis. Rather, Yehoshua established it when the Jewish people entered Israel, that they should say this tikkun to separate between the families of the land and the nations of the land, right? Between the Koyeh Ha'aratzos and Mishpechos Ha'adama, right? And they had already accepted a God upon themselves, and therefore he established that they bow before Melech Malchei HaMalachim HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as they would not bow in Chutz La'aretz, meaning this was something that Yehoshua was mistaken as he crosses over from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael. But Eruvin and Yadayim were established by King Shlomo. It makes sense that he established in Tiel Sudan because of a concern of Truma, which is again in the Gemara. But Eruvin, how could he have established it? Were the Jews not already practicing Eruvin before Shlomo? And again, he says it makes sense that Aleinu L'Shabeach was established by Yehoshua, as beforehand they were in Chutz La'aretz, and now they entered Israel, meaning there was a change. But with Eruvin, asks the questioner in this tshuva, which is recorded, written down by Rav Haigon, as this is what you asked me, says it makes sense that Yehoshua, with Aleinu, there was a change. Before they were in Chutz La'aretz, now they've entered Eretz Yisrael, it makes sense to set up something new. But with Eruvin, with King Shlomo creating Eruvin, what would there have been different beforehand? Okay? And nevertheless, he says, certainly this is the case, the matter shows this, but for Eruvin, how did they not practice this prior? And the Gaon Rabbeinu Hai answered that certainly this was the case, and it goes on to the entire tshuva. I gave you the rest of the tshuva in Hebrew. And that's what we have. Now, what's very interesting is this language here, little tidbits and little sections of it actually mirror the language that you have in source number 7, the text of that letter about Aleinu L'Shabeach to Rav Haigon. And therefore, we can say, great, we've got this letter of Haigon, that's why people attributed it to him, and the truth is Yehoshua ben Nun, authoring Aleinu, comes from just early a source. However, you heard me reading it, and I was not the only person who read it and thought it was a little bit funny. The Mishnah Halachos, Rav Menashe Klein, in analyzing this tshuva, and he's the only one that I saw that discusses it, asks a bunch of questions, and he talks, and this question, that question is, Balshenis, the second wonder that he says he has, Gama Dimron Aleinu L'Shabeach Shetikin Yehoshua Ein Lo Muvan. He says, it's a bit of a weird comparison, like, it doesn't seem to be comprehensible in any way. And guess what? This tshuva of Rav Haigon exists in two other compendiums, one of which the tshuvos were drawn from. And the Arugas HaBosam, which quotes this tradition of Yehoshua writing it again 200-odd years after Rav Haigon dies, there's footnotes on it which go back and look at the original source of Rav Haigon. And I looked up the tshuvos myself in the Tshuvos HaGeonim Lick edition, and says Ephraim Urbach, noting this and reading also the Sefer HaItim where some of these tshuvos were taken from, there's none of this at all in the parallel sources in which this responsum is found. If you look in those other versions of the tshuva, neither of them have a word about Aleinu L'Shabeach. Now that's getting pretty serious. So at this point, we've now found evidence, because again, we've got two other versions of the tshuva, presumably from where this was drawn, and they don't have a word about Aleinu. The Aleinu section seems to be oddly inserted in a question about Shlomo HaMelech being misaken things. And what's it doing there? And this has led scholars to say that, you know what, the person who edited these responsive and published them, this particular section of them, was actually someone known to do things like this. And they suspect that he added it in here as well. Now, there's some hints in the language as well. The language, there's a whole long, if you look back in that article, the Wolfson article that I cited in source number 9, He actually gives you a whole discussion of this and talks about the language and how we can identify it with a particular individual. We're not going to get into that now, but it seems to, again, to be perfectly honest, the way, if you're looking at it from an emistic point of view, it's very hard to believe that Rav Haigon wrote that. It's also hard to believe because, again, he says that this is, it seems like from the Tshuva at least, maybe even not, but it sounds like this is something well known. Like everybody knows Yoshua Rodelinu, and yet not a single source from that time, and not a single source for the next 200 years, even makes slight mention of it. So this is something, again, that's very, very sketchy, and we're left at that same crossroads. If we say that everything that was written about Yehoshua composing it comes from after the time that these tshuvos were published, we really will be forced to admit that it's completely false. If, however, we find stuff that certainly predates the publishing of these tshuvos, then we're safe and we can say it's a legitimate tradition. Unfortunately for us, we do. The Rokeach, who lives around 1200 before, he's actually born in the 1100s, but he lives certainly before these tshuvos were published by this other person. He actually says this. He says, Aleinu l'shabeach l'adon hakol, kol, and I wasn't able to translate this. I may have had the space to do it, but it just didn't end up getting done. Nevertheless, he talks about, within there, he says, Yoshua, and I see I somehow missed the Shemos on this, so please do not throw out this middle sheet. Please put it in Shemos or return it to me. But basically, Yoshua, the man of Hashem, it could be that, I don't know how that was missed, I did a search and replace, but nevertheless, it has Shemos. He basically says, Yoshua enters Eretz Yisrael, he sees the other nations and what's going on, and he composes this. And just as Moshe hid his name in Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbos, Mizmor Shir HaShabbos is Rashi Tevos Moshe, so too we have over here Yehoshua in which words? Here we go, ready? Aleinu Lishabeach is the Ayin at the end of his name. Then Shelo Sam Chalkenu Kahem is the Shin. Va'anachnu Korim is the Vav, and who Elokeinu, which again, somehow this source got missed in the Shemus run, is the Hey, which spells out his name Hoshea, because that was his original name, so that's how he hid his name inside Elenu to sign it, just like we sign Piyutim. That's what people tend to do. And he says, even crazier than that, okay, V'yasat Kufnun Beis Tevos, there were 152 words, mean Elenu ad l'ol me'ad timloch bechavod. Because that's where Aleinu originally ended. The Kakasu B'Sarasecha is actually the first pasuk that we say of Malchuyos. And therefore, the Rokeach says this was it. Now, where does the Rokeach get this from? We don't really know. He mentions a couple of ideas. He mentions this idea that he found Hoshea and Rashi Tevos going backwards in the middle of Aleinu. And he mentions the idea that it has 152 words. What's special about 152 words? I forgot to say. It's actually the number of Bin Nun. Okay? If you add up, Beis is 2, Nun is 50, and the last name spelled Chaser, Nun Nun, is another 100, you get 152. That's how many words were in Aleinu up to that point. Okay, if you want to be really cool and you want to add back in the Vav, he gives reasons why the Vav was excluded, but if you want to say, Hashem Yimloch Le'olam Va'ed, adds your 6, which is the Vav in Bin Nun, but I didn't see that anywhere. It's just my own clever creation, I guess. Nevertheless, this is a very legitimate source and ties it into a Rashi Tevos, ties it into a Gematria. We see other such similar hints found in other places that go later on. However, we don't really know a source for this. It sort of pops up out of thin air. It's possible that he came up with it on his own based on what he found. That is a possibility. It doesn't seem like there was some sort of existing tradition that we know of. Although, again, that's also technically possible and just pops up at this point. There were many traditions that were revealed at that time, especially Kabbalistic ones. The Kolbo, however, has a bit of a different take. The Kolbo was somewhere around the time as to when this is supposed to have been forged, this tshuva from Rav Haigon. And he says, it's a very well-known halacha sefer. He suggests that, he says, after all tfilos you say aleinu l'shabeach, meaning that was already the custom then, Beperek Rabbi Eliezer Omer, in the chapter Rabbi Eliezer Omer, which seems to be Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, which is a famous medrash, it says Shevach Gadol Yesh Be'Alinu L'Shabeach. There's great praise in Alinu L'Shabeach, Shevach L'Shabeach. Alkein, therefore, Tzarich Le'omrom Mi'umad, you have to say it standing. V'timsa Alinu Ole Begematria U'Mi'umad. Okay, Some people say this is because, again, people were already walking while saying it. If you had it starting to be at the end of davening, there were worries about this. Some people say the reason why there's this emphasis on standing is you've got to stand in one place, you've got to take it seriously, and that's why we're talking about what great powers Aleinu has, Shevach Gadol. And again, he says, Vishamati sheYehoshua tikno b'shah shekavash Yericho v'chasam b'oshem kadnut l'mafri. And he says, I heard from someone that Yehoshua composed it. It seems to be some sort of hearsay that was just circulating. That's also another possibility. And we don't really know what the source is. We don't have a definitive source. We do have definitive sources that say this, but we don't really know where it comes from. But fortunately, as we said, it does actually come into existence prior to when this is forged, meaning this was already something that people were saying at the time that the forger of this letter was alive, and he put that into the letter to give it an earlier source. However, the source is indeed before the forger's time, but not as early as he attempts to forge it is. Are we clear? Okay, so this is a crazy story. I know you don't usually end up with forgeries in Shiurim, but that's where we are. Now, here's a really cute thing, that if you're going to go with this idea of based on the Rashi Tevos and Gematrias and things like this, there was actually another theory that started circulating only a few hundred years later, in about the 1500s. That was at least, there was this beautiful sefer called Tfila Le'ish, Aleinu L'Shabeach, which is an over 700-page sefer on Aleinu. So last week you thought it was good that we had a 300 or so page sefer on Unetana Tokef. Now we've got a 700-page sefer on Aleinu L'Shabeach. And in it, he puts forth one of the suggestions that was known in the 15, 1600s, which is that although Yehoshua composed the Aleinu part, Al-Kein Nekavelcha was actually composed by someone else. And this is amazing. Because who was famously alive in Yehoshua's time? One of the most famous stories of Yehoshua in Yericho was what happens once they capture Yericho? Achan, the famous story of Achan. Now says, again, the Sefer Seder Ayom of Rav Moshe Machir, who lived around the time of the Beis Yosef, Al-Kein Nitzkena Al-Yedei Achan. Al-Kein Nekave is Ayin Chaf Nun. Al-Kein Nekave Achan. And he says that Yehoshua composed the first half, and Achan, after he did tshuva, before he was put to death, composed the second half. Now, I don't think that's actually, I mean, this is coming up for the first time in the 1500s. It's clear that this is something that was developed from finding these hints. This is not some Masorah that was hidden even beyond that, that we don't see mentioned earlier. It's a funny idea, but I don't think that we actually have to assume that that's real. If anything, we should assume that Yehoshua wrote it. Now, does he mean to say this is what it meant, Yehoshua wrote it, that it came from Achan, and this was Achan's realization after he saw what he did was wrong? It's a nice idea. It's technically possible. I don't know. I wasn't there, but it certainly doesn't have sort of the bang behind it that saying Yehoshua does. I mean, you have the Rokeach, and you have many other Rishonim from that same time, all where it pops up again around 1200 or so, saying that it's Yehoshua that wrote Aleinu. This Achan thing's come up a few hundred years later, but anyways, interesting. Now, this is not the only famous theory floating around about the origin of Aleinu, is this Yehoshua theory. There were definitely other theories that came around. One of them, interestingly, is based on a Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says, "Ditani bitkiyasa de Rav," in source 21, as it says in the tikiyasa of Rav. What's the tikiyasa of Rav? It literally sounds like it means the blowing of Rav. Okay, and here's what it says. Tell me if these words sound familiar to you. Zehayom tchilat maasecha zikaron liyom rishon ki chok liYisrael hu mishpat l'Elokei Yaakov ve'al hamadinot bo yamer izol acher ve'izol ha'shalom izol ha'ra'ah ve'izol ha'sova. Sound familiar? Where does it come from? It's the opening of Zichronos. It's part of the Zichronos prayer that we say in our Rosh Hashanah, and the Talmud Yerushalmi refers to it as Tkiyasa Derav. What does it mean, Tkiyasa Derav? You look at the Korban Ha'eda, one of the commentaries on the Yerushalmi. In the Tkiyata of Rav, it means Seder Musaf, the order of Musaf, Shasider Rav. That Rav, although it means organized, it means he said it. That's why we're referring to it in his name. And it's called V'kaylei Tkiyata, and it's called the blowings. Why? Since in Musaf, we blow the shofar, right? We know that we blow the shofar during Musaf. Those are the main tkiyos, al seder habrachos, we call them. And therefore, we call it Tkiyasa de Rav, because Rav actually composed the text of Musaf. So if he's composed the opening of Zichronos, it might make sense that he composed the opening of Malchios as well. What's the opening of Malchios, of course? Aleinu L'Shabeach, right? That's where we traditionally started. and maybe Shofros. And if you see, if you look in other places, again, the Korban Eidah says this is referring to the entire Musaf that he set up, and the Yerushalmi is quoting from this prayer version that Rav created. If you look interestingly in the Tshuvos HaGaonim of Rav Haigon, which it happens to be that this tshuva also may be one of the suspect tshuvas because it's very heavy in Kabbalah, but the Zohar actually says something similar as well to this particular tshuva, not to the other one. The Zohar does not mention Alim L'Shabeach and Yehoshua ben Nun. I don't remember if it mentioned Alina L'Shabeach. I don't think so. But I don't remember if I checked it up. Nevertheless, another tshuva of Rav Haigon, he says that you were asking about the Rosh Hashanah tefillah. How many uvechains do we have? Right? Uvechain, tein pachtecha, uvechain, tein kavod, right? All those uvechains that we have. He says, how many should you have? He says, this that was created by Rav. Meaning, he says, even the atakadosh bracha, meaning the kedushas Hashem bracha, was actually created by Rav. He says it's part of it, and he says you have to have three of them, and if you have more than them, it's a mistake. You have to send the chazan back, that he should only say three, and you should punish the chazan. It's a very interesting tshuva. This, again, it goes back to the Zohar as well, so you have to know what's going on here. We don't worry about this too much. And again, the fact that Aleinu Shabbeach and Seder Tchiyasa go together is something that we see in the next source as well. Responsor of Yosef Tov Elam, cited in Mafsar Vitri, so a fairly early source, saying, V'shomea Aleinu L'Shabeach, V'seder Tchiyasa V'pi Shliach Tzibur, you hear Aleinu and the Seder Tchiyasa from Shliach Tzibur. Now, you could look at that and say they're two distinct things, but they're clearly part of the same section. If we've seen people saying that Rav was the one who wrote all the Uvechains, and we've seen the Gemara noting that he was the one who wrote the Tfilos that open, at the very least, Malchios, it's not ridiculous to say that he would have composed Aleinu L'Shabeach. What also is important, and I'll skip for... Actually, I won't skip. I'll go to the next source. What's also important is that we've got a bit of a problem with the authorship of Yehoshua from a practical point of view. Let's read some psukim in Yeshaya together. Hikavetsu, vavou, hisnagshu, yachtav, pelitei hagoyim, lo yadu hanosiim, es eitz pislam, Umispalelim el Elo Yoshia. Interesting. You can read through, you'll see a lot of similar themes to Aleinu. If you jump to the last pasuk that we have here, which is pasuk, I think, Chaf Gimel I had, it says in Yeshaya still, Binishpati yatsami pi tzedaka davar velo yashuv, ki li tichra kol berech tishava kol hashon. So there seems to be a lot of phrases in Aleinu that have parallels in, not say for Yehoshua, but say for Yeshaya. So again, we're forced to say one of two things. Either Aleinu L'Shabeach was in existence, Yeshaya modified it for the psukim which he said, Benevuah, or we say that it was created based on psukim around the Torah. This is especially important because a lot of the phrases that are used in Aleinu are not phrases that we see used in biblical times. For example, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not come up in Tanakh. So this has led people looking at it with a critical eye to say, at the very least, if it was written by Yehoshua, it was definitely modified by Rav before he put it into the, or not by Rav, by someone very early on, may have been earlier than Rav, we don't know, but Rav is the most likely suspect, being on what we know about him. If you read in Source 26, and we'll finish soon with this, its author appears to be the one who composed all of Tfilas Musaf for Rosh Hashanah. That was Rav, colleague of Shmuel, who composed the three introductories to the verses that are found in the brachos of Malchiyot, Zichronos, and Shofros, and the tfilos that follow them. The order of brachos were known among the sages as the tkiyasa of Rav, because Rav composed them, we blow shofar after each bracha. So the simplest way to view it is, in fact, that this is what happened. Rav created them. The Yehoshua story, we'll talk about in a moment. Either it was actually composed by Yehoshua and modified with language, which some people suggest. Monk suggested in his book on Tefillah, or Rabbi Monk suggested in his book on Tefillah. Others suggested as well that it may have been modified, or we say that Rav wrote it and the Yehoshua was just something that crept in. Either someone made it up, or it was based on what they had found, but what they had found with the Rashi Tevos is not necessarily 100% certain that that means that he wrote it. Either way, just for the last couple of minutes to think sort of what each of these stories will invoke for us. Obviously we know that Aleinu is full of the themes of Malchios everywhere. Melech Malchi Amlachim HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is also a phrase that seems to appear after the time of Yehoshua, but again, not so much for what we're talking about now. It makes sense that it would be put in Malchios. This is all about crowning Hashem king and talking about his kingdom over all the other gods, over all the other nations, over, above, and beyond, and would certainly fit in with the themes that we're trying to express of crowning Hashem king. Certainly it was taken by people in the 1100s as something that was really the ultimate way to communicate with Hashem, not only because of the theme, meaning when they were being killed, to die al-Kiddush Hashem, and they would say this prayer not only because it has the themes of Hashem Melech, but also because it was the high point of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So it is possible that at some point it started to be linked to an earlier event, perhaps for a couple of reasons. Now, again, it works totally fine if it's written by Rav, or if it's a modification of what Yehoshua ben Nun wrote. If, however, we're trying to understand how people might have come to Yehoshua ben Nun without an actual tradition on it, other than by finding his Rashi Tevos and, you know, the Gematrias that we found, which should not be discarded. And again, we don't know what happened. The only thing we for sure know is that the phrases that don't make sense to belong to Yehoshua were changed by someone later. But it's something to consider is the Yehoshua Yericho point is one of the highest points in Jewish history. Think of where we are, right? We've now gotten into Eretz Yisrael. We basically miraculously conquered this big, strong city at the entrance with all the big, big, big walls that we've just made come tumbling down. And in fact, according to some of the different versions, Alein L'Shavach was actually recited as they circled the walls. That's when it was actually created. And really, it would make sense in terms of the content. We're talking about ridding Eretz Yisrael of idolatry, right? All of these other gods are worthless. And this could have been very likely something that was happening at that pinnacle of Jewish history when Yehoshua comes into Yericho. And what else do we have going on at that point in time? When they're surrounding the walls and we're saying that some people say they're saying Aleinu Shabbat, what else are they doing? They're blowing shofar. So perhaps part of that imagery, and again, this highest point, and really, this was the time where, like, you're B'nai Yisrael, you're coming into Eretz Yisrael, you're watching in front of your eyes Hashem take down the people that are before you in Eretz Canaan. This is amazing. And maybe that's these reasons and more combined to why we might have said this was written by Yehoshua, because it really does fit what's going on in Yericho. It really is. Melech Malchei Melechim HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shunot Shemayim Yosid Aretz. And all we have to do now is get rid of all this idolatry, right? And perhaps that's part of the reason how this came up. Again, we don't know what actually happened. We weren't there. We do know, again, that certainly some of the phraseology doesn't work. Certainly the early sources for this attribution to Yehoshua ben Nun are incorrect. They're of high gon, again, assorted chuvos that are attributed to him. We do know that it has very legitimate sources in a number of Rishonim, somewhere around the 1200s, 1300s. We don't know where the source of that is. Some people say they heard it from other people. Some people may have actually seen it in the Rav Haigon that was forged. It's hard to know exactly what was going on, but nevertheless, we have these ideas that this really is the highest crowning of Hashem king over us, whether it was created specially for this occasion, or whether we're repurposing a tefillah that was used at the times of Yericho, really at a high point of our crowning Hashem king. Have a kesiva v'chasima tova, and a wonderful Rosh Hashanah. I hope this helped you connect to some of the tefillahs in Rosh Hashanah a little bit better, and we'll take questions right after the recording is off. Yeah.